Coming up on this week's edition of The Front Page, three really divisive issues: Constitution Hill, the Racing League, and the Skelicopter / Harry Plane. Plus, Chris Cook tells me I've placed the worst 7-4 bet in racing and betting history. All that and much more on this week's The Front Page. Yes, hi there. Welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. Before we get going, this is Safer Gambling Week, a really important week with a really important message. And we know that as regular readers and viewers of Racing Post content, you will almost certainly be regular and safe punters, but not everybody is. And this is a week in which it's useful to be reminded that resources are available for anyone who needs help. If that's you or if it's someone that you know, there is help available. Messages here on the screen, and also you can go to safergamblinguk.org. We have a week to look back on now in this week's show with myself, Lee Mottisad, and my Racing Post colleagues, Chris Cook and Matt Rennie. Hello, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very, very good.
Gorgeous. It wasn't gorgeous at Cheltenham on Friday. It tiddled down all day, got better on Saturday and Sunday. The racing was interesting throughout, and we'll start the programme by talking about the racing. It's the November meeting is built around the Paddy Power Gold Cup, and it was won by the guy who is now Britain's leading trainer, Dan Skelton. Panic Attack. Chris, what do you make of the big race?
Overall, over the whole meeting, I thought it was like a real thumbs up for Dan Skelton, wasn't it? Because,
yeah.
I mean, he'd done well going into it. He was on fire. But then this is the real racing starting. This is when, you know, big name trainers are starting to get their quality horses out. And so the question is, can you still dominate when everybody else is trying to win those good prizes?
Yeah.
And he's ended up having a great weekend. Panic Attack was a little bit hard to assess. I think she'd only run over fences. What was it, once last season?
Windsor, 1-1.
Won easily, but I mean, nothing like the same class of race.
And it was at Windsor that Dan Skelton first said to Brian Drew, and this was back in January, we should be looking at the Paddy Power Gold Cup.
He said that.
Reinforcing, Matt, this idea that he's a proper target trainer.
Oh, absolutely so. And there was no panic about it in the end with the way she won.
No.
Look, she was terrific. And she said, as Chris said, it was the first real big weekend of the new jump season, where if you are going to put a mark down for the title, I know people might say it's way too early on. It is way too early on, but you need to get the early goals in the back of the net first, don't you? Before Willie starts bringing over his big guns, which it seems like he's going to be doing a little bit earlier than we've seen over the last couple of seasons as well. It was a big weekend for Dan. I couldn't have Panic Attack beforehand just because of that uncertainty about it, but she absolutely blew them apart. Admittedly, I don't think it was a vintage renewal of the Paddy Power.
It was a poor renewal of the Paddy.
Yeah, it definitely was, but she could only beat what was in front of her.
It's a rum thing on the end there.
I just think with a handicap chase, what you most want is intrigue and competition.
And you felt it had both?
And a good, you know, it's a good puzzle, and it was all of that.
Okay.
You know, I'm not asking it to be a Gold Cup trial. I don't think it ever really was that.
No.
I can remember lots of winners, even back as far as the 80s, that were never going anywhere except that day.
I mean, with the programme as well, and Paul Nicholls touched on it during racing during the week, we've got a Grade 1 programme now, which some people might think might be a little bit bloated, but it's not what it once was when we were having the likes of Dublin Flyer running in the Paddy Power Gold Cup. We've got the Betfair Chase a week after, which is a really established 3-mile staying chase, a Grade 1 now, and you're going to run them in that. And as Paul Nicholls said, we've got a Grade 1 programme for Grade 1 horses, and we want to be seeing the Grade 1 horses in the Grade 1s. So it's just had a sort of a remake over the last couple of years, or a fair few years now, because the Betfair Chase has been in for 20 years, I think it is now, this week. So it's been a long time.
That's snuck up on me.
Yeah,
you quite often hear that moan about when a race is finished and we're asking, oh, what race at the festival might this horse go for? So people are like, well, why can't he just enjoy today? And I think that's what the November meeting is. It's a sort of an end in itself.
Okay.
It doesn't typically lead anywhere during the rest of the season. A big long piece in today's paper talking about the last three seasons. There were only two festival winners that ran at the November meeting. It's early in the season. Yards that are really hot now typically tend to, you know, struggle to maintain that all the way through to the middle of March, which is, you know, maybe something for Skelton to worry about. He's probably just a bit too big to have that concern. You've got so many horses, I would think he'll be all right. But so, like, you take a yard like Joe Tizzard.
Joe Tizzard, who won the Great Wilbur Lexi. The old boy won the race on Friday.
Eldorado Allen,
Triple Trade as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Tizzard, as of this morning, he's literally had five winners in a row. Going great, and I'm really chuffed for him. But he was also hot in November last year, and it's really difficult to make that last for 4 months because your horses go up in the ratings, and then, you know, other people's horses come into form. So the most typical thing is if you're hot now, you won't be hot in the middle of March.
And if we're expecting Dan Skelton to remain hot through the season, the next few weeks of the season look set to be big for him. He's got Grey Dawning, favourite for the Betfair Chase, this coming Saturday. Following Saturday, could well have Panic Attack in the Coral Gold Cup. Right. More importantly, he's got the new line against Constitution Hill. More of him later
in the
Fighting
so big,
Fifth.
Isn't it?
Lotus Sud, who won on Friday, thrashing John Bond in the Tingle Creek. John Bond has spent falls.
I mean, I was really disappointed with him. Just because, okay, there was mitigating factors by the sounds of it afterwards. Conditions weren't suitably right because it was, as you said, it was tipping it down and it definitely had an effect. But I thought going towards the top of the till, I didn't think Nico looked really comfortable at all. I thought he looked really outpaced at that point in terms of Lotus Hood was hard on the bridle, but you saw Nico's hands were sort of just cajoling him along a little bit at that sort of point towards the fourth last. I was thinking, he's not going that well here.
And so, you know, in fairness, he's nearly 10.
Exactly that.
He might have lost a yard or two of pace. But yeah. I mean, I think Nicky was clear afterwards that this is a prep run. This is a run on the way to the Tingle Creek.
Yeah.
This is the run without which he might not even get to the Tingle Creek in peak condition. So, and he's never been at his best at Cheltenham, has he, John Bond?
Never. But the concern for me was it was 18 lengths between him and Lotus Sud. That's all quite a lot to turn over. And in terms of whether Lotus Sud was at peak fitness or whatnot, but also he was going to be third had JJ Slevin not produced an absolute rodeo masterclass on Matasa at the final fence. It was just a bit of a concern for me. And maybe, as you said, 9 to 10, we're not looking at he's going to be at his massively peak anymore. I mean, there was the great debate during last week, is John Bonner great or not? The greats will probably still beat Lotus quite easily on their comeback and whatnot. But
I would be happy putting a line straight through that.
I just thought maybe this time it would have been the right time to have a crack at the King George with him at 9 versus 10, but it seems like they're going to keep down the 2 mile route.
But he did hint at maybe the Ryanair Chase as a festival target potentially. We saw about him and Sergino saying, "Have we got a Ryanair Chase horse?"
Well, the thing is, as well, we know JP McManus would love to win the Champion Chase. He's obviously going to have Margeborough in there as well.
Yeah.
But then he's got Factor File in the Ryanair. So
yeah.
John Bond could go wherever he wants at the moment because he's sort of got that not as you say, not a spent force target at the moment, but maybe the pressures to be the best for John Bond's not there right now because of the return, and we seemingly think there's better candidates for JP in the Champion Chase and the Ryanair.
Willie Mullins wasn't involved at Cheltenham at all over the 3 days.
No.
He was involved at Navan. He'll be involved as we're recording this on Monday morning. During Monday, loads of great horses going to be running. It's an amazing Monday, including Copec de Bord for Willie Mullins, Alan Lambert for Nicky Henderson. Both really exciting novice chases. But geez, I absolutely fell in love with Final Demand at Navan in his first run over fences.
Really,
I thought
good,
he jumped amazingly, won it so easily. Loved what he did.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too negative right away, but it did look a little bit like one of those races where a lot of the other runners are thinking this is just the start to our season. Let's not kill ourselves by getting in a fight with a Cheltenham Festival prospect. You know, I'm sure there are horses behind him who are going to get better as the season goes on. Let's say that.
Well, Wingman's a good horse, so, and yeah, he brushed him aside.
Yeah, and I mean, he properly put his effort into the race and was tired at the last, wasn't he?
And amazing betting for that. Going towards a brand advisory, 6-4 Final Demand, 20-1.
Yeah.
Bar one horse.
So, but the 6-4 should ring alarm bells because that's the price Final Demand was at the last Cheltenham Festival when he got beat in the Turners, didn't he? And he ended up looking a bit one-paced. He's got a bit of size about him, doesn't he? And those horses don't always love Cheltenham. If you get dry ground again come the next festival, then potentially that's a trapdoor for him.
I'm pleased that after your positivity about the pipe, you've returned to your default Victor Meldrew.
No,
Matt, tell them, but
what a label, Matt, to hit me with.
Be positive about it. He was good, wasn't he?
He was all right. he was very good. I thought he was going to win the Turners Novices Hurdle this year, and I was actually slightly disappointed with how he ran on the old course. And obviously the
didn't go hard enough on him.
No. The brand advisory is still on the old course, so that's something in my mind. I'm more thinking of not just for the brand advisory and Cheltenham Festival. Definitely not. We can't just think about it this time of the year, but there's always that worrying thing of where is the British Staying Novice Chasers now. I know he was beaten on his return. Derry Hassan Paddy obviously ran during the week at Ayr, and he didn't jump well enough on his return. I thought I wouldn't see him for the stables tour with Lucinda and Michael Scudamore, and yeah, he's an absolute big beast of a horse. Mm. He's going to get better as the season goes along. Yeah. But whether he's up to that level or more an Ultima horse in time and on for those 3 miles stay in handicap chases that they seem to farm out up in Kinross all the time, yeah, is another thing. But you're looking at last season's brand advisory or stay in novice chase division was a real concern for the British, and it's still rolling on or the fear is that it might still roll on.
Well, I'm all in on Final Demand, and I say that as someone who was all in last year on Ballyburn. So what could possibly go wrong?
Hold on though, I mean, you haven't actually backed him, have you?
I have.
You backed him for the Brown Advisory. At what price did you get?
7-4. Because I think he'll start odds on.
Are you seriously telling me there's no better use you've got for that money between now and March than taking 7-4 about a novice chaser who's run once over fences? Oh my God.
I was blown away.
Well, fair enough, but I could find you a better bet than that today. And then you could use that money again tomorrow. I mean, assuming it wins.
I'll tell you what was very good about Final Demand is whenever he was getting in mildly close to the fence, he sorted himself out straight away.
There you go.
And that's the sign of an incredibly clever horse. And as a rider, you want that. Yeah. Because if you miss the stride on the horse, the high class want to sort themselves out. And he was doing that through yesterday. If you were apart from that, it was sort of a jog in the field.
Thank you.
I thought that was quite taken. He was very smooth and very, very clever, and you need horses to be like that.
Well, thank you. Having been humiliated by Cook over there,
that was not my intention, but
cut me to the core.
Genuine surprise on my part.
Well, I'm a man who likes a surprise. What do you think about, before we move on from the weekend, the big issue, the real burning issue of the weekend?
What's this going to be? Oh, that, right.
So you call it the Harry Copter.
The Harry Plane.
Harry Plane.
Some people call it the Skelly-copter. But he's doing the wings, so it can't be a helicopter.
Oh, you make a fair point. Yeah. So fair to say that on social media, which of course where we all go for considered opinions, there was divided views as to whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. Producer Sam, who runs this show with a cracking whip, he was saying to us that he took a friend racing on Saturday to Cheltenham, who'd never been racing before, first time racing, and he was more energised and enthused by the Harry Plane Skelly-copter than anything else on the day, and it made him want to go back racing again.
I should have asked if he'd backed the winner, this guy. But he didn't have a bet, did he? So I guess
not. No, but he's keen on Final Demand for the Brown Advisory. So that's do we like it?
I've seen him do it before and thought, yes, okay, that adds to the gaiety of proceedings and whatever. Mm-hmm. This time, for some reason, there was a really visceral reaction that I just hated it because...
That's because he beat you.
Exactly.
Why.
No, the vital context, and I'm very aware of this, is that I backed two other things in the race that were out of shot by the time he was crossing the line.
Right.
So I'm not proud of this reaction.
No.
Nevertheless, I felt it, and presumably other people felt it for similar reasons. So opinion is divided, right? But provocative acts are maybe helpful in the entertainment industry.
Entertainment. We are in the entertainment industry.
That's where we are. So yeah.
It's got a lot of people talking.
Yeah.
That's what you need for the sport. I mean, I love it. I think it's great. I think we need more of it. I love it when Soumillon does his little shushes to the camera and whatnot after winning a big race.
He did a really weird thing on Hurricane Run, didn't he, that time?
Yeah, well, that was one where he put his finger towards his bottom.
Yes.
And André Favre didn't
just
like that.
That got a bit strange.
André Favre didn't like Barcelona's.
So,
or moi.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was a bit too far.
He nearly lost the race. He hadn't seen the horse. Anyway, back to that another day.
I love it. I was doing the live blogs this weekend for Cheltenham, and it was one of the most talked about. I put a question out there. What do you make of the Harry Plane?
Yeah.
And it was one of those talked about things. And a lot of people were not a fan of it, but they were going, keep your hands on the reins, you know. I don't think it's that much of a welfare issue. I mean, I don't buy that at all. Out of the people in sport, in terms of riders, this is Harry Skelton, the son of an Olympic winning gold medalist, been around horses all his life. I think he'd know how to keep balanced on a horse. I know they do everything horses are animals, and they could do something, but I think we're just sort of...
The welfare thing is a line you use if you've decided that you hate it and we're you want to come up with a reason,
we shouldn't
right?
shut out the welfare word.
I think we can try to overkill it. I'm not saying it's going to get to the levels that Frankie Dettori's flying dismounts got, but people notice these little niche sort of unique trademark celebrations in a way. Sure. And it makes people stand out a bit more. So in that terms, I quite like it. In football, I go to watch football matches, and if an opposition player scores against my team and goes and shushes the crowd, or Cristiano Ronaldo does his celebration, people hate it, but they know it. They know them because of it. I think we probably looked into it a bit too much, and also it's just great imagery for the sport in terms of the reins, but I just think we try to overkill it a bit.
Before we move on from horses and jockeys, something else that divides people, probably more than it should do, is Constitution Hill, who we know didn't have a fantastic spring with two falls and then not really looking like he wanted to do much at Punchestown on his final start. He's due to return. Well, first of all, he's due to go to Newbury on Tuesday morning for the gallops there, which didn't go well 12 months ago. Assuming it goes better this time, he takes on the new line in the Fighting Fifth Hurdle a week on Saturday. Now, Pete Thomas penned our latest Sunday Big Read. It's a fantastic piece with Nicky Henderson. Nicky talks about his returning stars for this season, but with an emphasis on Constitution Hill. And some of the quotes in relation to Constitution Hill are quite extraordinary. Look at this. "I think Constitution Hill is a completely different horse to last year. That might be crazy. How can he be? But he is." He also said, "I've never seen him move better. When I look at him, I think he's suddenly developed quality." I mean, it really does make it even more interesting what we get from Constitution Hill tomorrow and then a week on Saturday, because you might have imagined that Nicky would be sounding quite sort of circumspect going into the race, but just the opposite. He's sounding so positive. Gets me really excited.
He's a great cheerleader for horses.
Isn't he? Absolutely.
When he's proud of one that he's had for a few years. And that is terrific.
Yeah.
And he's very eloquent as well. It's not like he's saying the same thing again and again. So I like the fact that it's winding people up for this horse running. Hopefully it will run a week on Saturday.
Yeah.
Now that you've reminded me about that gallop, I'm a bit nervous again. Because we've a couple of times with him, we've seen gallops that were underwhelming, right? And led to him missing races. That Fighting Fifth really needs to have him in it. You know, him against the new line, that's a terrific race. Oh. The new line against some outsiders, that's
different,
not
deal.
So great. Yeah. So I tend to think that, you know, in all reason and fairness to the horse, we should limit our expectations, because he's 8 rising 9.
Yeah.
And it's hard to win top class 2 mile hurdle races.
And you made that point in the front runner this
morning.
Yeah,
I mean, so if you specifically look at the champion hurdle, there's only Hurricane Fly in the last 22 years who's won that race at the age of 9.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that something is going to be better than him. I mean, because he's had that really tough experience in the spring.
Yeah.
Two falls in the space of 3 weeks, and the second one was quite a heavy one.
Yeah.
And then the next time he comes out 3 weeks after that, he's clearly looking after himself. And he ballooned the first. It was like he was scared of it, which...
Yeah. Which was not understandable, given...
Very understandable, but completely new for that horse.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it is months later. Maybe he's just forgotten all about it. But I mean, I would think somewhere in the back of his mind, when he next turns up at a race course, he's going to be going, well, I'm going to be a little bit careful here, you know? And maybe I'm anthropomorphizing. It'll be really interesting to see if he is just the same horse he always was. He's sort of low and slick and brave. Yeah. Then it'll be a really interesting race, right? But he can't be a betting proposition for that race.
No, but he's a great narrative for the season. I think it's the narrative the season desperately needs is a miraculous comeback like that. When Sprinter Sacra came back to his best,
that was mad.
It was unbelievable in terms of the narrative around the whole season.
Yeah. And that started in the Schlur, didn't it?
So there were no excuses
for him that year.
Exactly.
He was ready.
Yeah. And look, I can understand people getting a bit tired of the consistent mention of Constitution Hill, but I think that's only when we just hear, though, he's in good form. We hope he's doing well. You say Nicky's been very, very eloquent there and nailing to the colours to the mast. It's what we need in the sport a bit more in terms of selling it to the people that we think we've got the one of the best hurlers we've ever seen back to his very best. I mean, I'll take it with a pinch of salt, but I'm still there with, I know a few people who've said to me as well, imagine this, just imagine Constitution Hill turning in at Newcastle, destroying the new line by 10 lengths and then going and turning in for the champion hurdle miles clear as well. How brilliant would it be for the jump season in terms of for the British jump season as well?
He's making a face. Well,
I mean, who knows if it's going to happen?
I don't think it's great for the sport when one horse wins really easily. If the two of them are together fighting it out, that's what's great for me.
I don't think he wins the fight, by the way. But I really do hope that there's still the spark there. As you said, that Aintree fall was an absolute
It was an absolute
And it had been coming.
The
Cheltenham fall had been coming.
We watched it at Aintree together.
Yeah.
And it was, we were like, right, I need to go see Nicky out, because that horse was, and you thought he was stunned and never going to get him back from that.
I remember saying to, I can't remember, I wrote my piece at Cheltenham on Champion Hurdle Day last year, that I was stood next to a press room colleague up in the grandstand before the Champion Hurdle, and said the one thing that worried me about Constitution Hill was his jumping, and that at some point it could be horrible. And
wow!
But anyway, because he was always been so low and so accurate, and you just feared that if he missed on one occasion, it could go wrong.
And I mean, that did, what was Nicky's one that fell on the Champion Hurdle in the far side that had won a Champion Hurdle or two?
Bouvardaire.
Yes.
Bouvardaire. So it jumped very similar. Was very accurate.
But that's how you become a really two-mile hurdler. You know, you just bravely throw yourself over the top of them. I honestly, I didn't see it coming with Constitution Hill, even though he'd had that little scare at the last in the January
in the
race at Cheltenham.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I thought he was such a specimen that he was always going to find a way to get himself out of it. But it was dozy in the end, that what he did at the fourth last in the Champion Hurdle. It was like he wasn't really paying attention.
And to then do the same thing again at Aintree, it's like you haven't learned from your... Anyway, let's hope he has learned now, and let's hope that we get a fantastic race at Newcastle a week on Saturday, and full coverage of the Tuesday morning gallops at Newbury on all Racing Post platforms. On a Racing Post platform earlier today, Monday as we record, you will have seen, hopefully, news that something else that divides people. The Racing League is in a bit of a precarious position for 2026. ARC and ITV have withdrawn their support, their backing for the Racing League, which means if it's to continue this year, Jeremy Ray, the founder and chief executive of the team competition, will need to find new racecourse homes for the competition and then get BHA approval to stage fixtures. At the same time, and although ARC has stressed this is not connected, ARC has launched a new five meeting Friday night series called Friday Night Live. It'll run at Newcastle, Southwell and Wolverhampton on five Friday nights, so January, February and March. These cards will have seven handicaps on the cards, a total prize money per meeting of over £200,000. And crucially, these new fixtures, they are being aimed at people age 18 to 25. So the three of us are narrowly, well, two of us are narrowly ruled out. One of us might still be.
I'm 26.
Okay, so you just about count.
I've narrowly missed the boat.
Big show.
Chris and I are in our mid-30s, so we don't quite get there. But yeah, Friday Night Live being staged in conjunction with Invades, the organisation that's done so much good work in bringing students to race day. So let's take these two in individual bits. We'll start with the positive news, Friday Night Live. So I say five meetings aimed at young people, 8 to 25, DJ sets between racing. Good idea, isn't it?
Yeah, very interesting idea. I can see it being a good experience on the track. I don't know so much about selling it as a TV product, but I mean...
And they really are selling it as a TV. They'll do all every race. Megan Nichols, who again is more Matt's age than our age, will be presenting the coverage. And it's very much being... It's not made for TV, precisely, but it is very much that the Invades will be working with ITV in terms of producing the programmes.
Well, good luck to them. It's an interesting idea. I mean, I think Friday night is a really difficult sort of TV real estate to break into. You know, we'll see what happens. It's there's some scope for them to try something, right? Like I say, I think if you're actually there, that would be really good fun. And not not really surprised to see the Racing League in trouble. I mean, we've been talking about this for years, how they haven't really built the audience that they always were aiming at and hoping to get to.
We were sold with such high expectations. If we're going to transform the sport, we're going to bring a big new sport. And the six meetings that took place last year had a combined attendance of just over 15,000 people. People ain't going to them.
That's dismal. I mean, it was an awful lot of big talk right at the beginning. But then they started off with what seemed like a big pot of money from somewhere. And you thought that maybe that was going to lead somewhere positive, but the concept was flawed to begin with. You know, they had those weirdly branded teams that people were supposed to attach themselves to, and it wasn't clear why. And then they went for the geographical thing, which is probably where they should have started. But even that wasn't very convincing. Like, horses representing Ireland weren't from Ireland.
From Newmarket, in the east of England, representing Ireland, which is about 200 or so more miles away. It was ridiculous.
I mean, I could have accepted it if there was a strong link between the jockeys and the country, or the part of the country they were representing. But it wasn't even that. I think Nicola Curry was riding for London, and it's just like, well.
That's why I do.
People never bought into it.
I think that is, you're right to that on the head, nail on the head with that, of that's what killed any appetite for the Racing League in terms of, not only, it was a closed shop already for certain trainers and whatnot, but when they're asking you to support Team Talk Sport or Team Swish, I've never even heard of what Swish is in my life. And the geographical thing, I could understand a bit more. You know, if it was, you know, I live in Yorkshire. If I was then, there was a Team Yorkshire with trainers Richard Fahey, Grant Chua,
long list of
trainers you could have, and it would have brought some form of affiliation a bit closer together. It was just a broken concept from the beginning, unfortunately. As much as we try it, racing isn't much of a team game, really.
Sugarcoat works, it's a one-day event.
One day event.
And you bring in some amazing jockeys.
And I think there is scope for more, you know, the odd novelty race day beyond the Sugar Cup. Lots of people, like diehard racing fans, hate that idea. But I think there's lots of stuff that hasn't really been tried. But unfortunately, the Racing League has given that whole concept a kind of a bad name, I think.
It's going to be so hard for them to find a course as well, because there's obviously Racing TV, the track show Racing TV, have the Sky Bet Sunday series.
And also, when the Racing League was initially announced, if you like, the idea was to stage it across eight RMG tracks, including Epsom, Sandown, Leopardstown. That never came to pass. They ended up going to Ark and Sky Tracks. And it's just... More positively, again, with Friday Night Live, Matt, because you are, again, with due respect to myself and my learned colleague, you are more the target audience. Saturday at Cheltenham, a lot of young people, but on the second Saturday at Flemington, the Melbourne Cup Carnival, so I was over there, it was chucking it down with rain, much like Cheltenham on Friday, but watching the three group ones, I watched them in the Hill Grandstand, main grandstand, and it was just a sea of people in their 20s, suited and booted guys, beautifully dressed young girls. Almost all of them were in that target demographic. It was incredibly young. I mean, I felt ancient. It was incredibly young. But they were there, they were engaging with the racing, massively engaging with the racing. They're watching all the races. They were invested in it, and then they had a concert with a DJ Fisher after racing. So it can be done. You can get young people to the races. Invades have been doing it successfully. I mean, there's nothing, it's a good thing that ARC are trying to do this.
In terms of the ideas for change, and I'm all for trying ideas for change, I think this is one of probably the best ideas we've had in a long time. I went back in my heady days at university, I went on one of the first Invades ones with my university friends.
Okay.
And they absolutely loved it. And this was on a Saturday at Doncaster, I think. It might be November Handicap Day or something. Which obviously you've got your main racing crowd still there. The Invades had their own and tent and whatnot. I think this probably takes it to the next level in terms of, as you say, it's really difficult for TV, especially for the Friday night fixtures. But in terms of attendances, we'll see it through the winter now. Wolverhampton, Southall and Newcastle on a Friday night might have one man and his dog there. So you could give the younger people, they're all tracks that are near big universities as well, and university hubs, which is really, really key. But you could give them the freedom of the track almost in a way, in the grandstand and stuff, rather than their the DJ tents and whatnot. see, all of a sudden you're getting an influx of crowds and using the facilities and stuff like that. And yes, some people might be affected by those, you know, 50, 60, 100 people that would go on those Friday nights where it looks deserted. But so it'll be looking even better product on the TV if there's loads of people there.
Mm.
And I just think it's a right hole, sort of a right gap in the market for to get the students there on a Friday night as well. When I was at uni, and a lot of unis, the big night out is on a Wednesday. So you've already had 2 days to get over. Anyway, it's weird. It's society's night was a Wednesday. I was at University of Sheffield. Wednesday was the society's night. And sometimes Friday night, you might not go to like the nightclub or the pubs or anything like that. So if you're getting them in on a Friday night, you've got a big market there. And as I said, Newcastle's got amples of universities. Southwell's got Nottingham University, Nottingham Trent on its doorstep. Wolverhampton's got the University of Wolverhampton, Birmingham University as well. You've got a big pool there of students you can target. I think I'm really, really on board with it.
I like the idea of giving them access to the main grandstand, because yeah. I was at one of those Invades days in October where there were a lot of students.
The York one gets bigger and bigger, but they're on the the clock tower enclosure far
okay.
side.
That's actually quite fun, as long as it stays dry. That's a fun enclosure to be
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I was, it felt that they were slightly corralled away from the ordinary racegoers, and that, you know,
these.
Well, sorry, I don't think
that'll work.
No, and I think what you say, Matt, about the main grandstand is interesting too, because I know, speaking to ARC over the weekend, is that one of the ideas that's developing is that ITV would actually potentially have their presentation position on the grandstand steps. So they wouldn't be, if you like, in the participants area, in the winners enclosure. They'd be in amongst the people on the grandstand to try and really give it a lively okay. feel.
Being reminded of some of the scenes that happened behind John McCruick in those days in the betting ring, it might get a bit like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, but I think young people, especially young people, students and young people going to race, sometimes do get an unfair rap of they're just over that the race is for a big old party time. I think Invaders have done a really good job, and people are getting into the races more and more now. And you know, we can work around it. If there is the 50 people that would go to your Harden race car, that would go to your Newcastles or your South Wales on a Friday night, you could say, here you go, you've got Premier Enclosure access for tonight's meeting, complimentary, enjoy it. Because then you'll be hopefully appeasing everyone at that point.
I tell you, there's so much stuff they could try. It could be a really good place to experiment with the race day experience, because one of the things that so annoys me, especially when you've got lots of new racegoers, is that we don't make enough effort to make sure that everybody knows the result beyond the first three. Like, you know, say you've backed something in a sprint handicap that finishes 8th or 9th. You know, you as a newbie, you've probably got no idea where that's finished or why.
Yeah.
And we need to do more to sort of get people to care about that and to provide them with that information so that they don't feel like they've just blown their money for no particular
reason.
That's
a really good point.
I also think one final key thing for it, obviously big Saturdays, big meetings are different. For these meetings, they do not need to be charging skyrocket prices for food and drink and stuff like that. I'm sure they won't, but it's key they do that, because that'll definitely bring students back, and then they will be willing to spend that little bit more for a big race meeting.
Matt raises money there, and that is now key to the final section of the programme. This day last week, I had the pleasure of hosting the Racing Post SAS Betting Shop Manager of the Year Awards lunch in London, where Tracy Mooney from William Hill was crowned a superb champion. And she becomes champion at a really, it's a potentially desperate time, because we know that a week on Wednesday, Chancellor Rachel Rees will deliver her budget, which everyone is expecting to deliver very grim news for the betting and racing industries. Should Rachel Rees go through with what some are expecting in the budget in terms of how she tackles remote gaming duty and machine games duty, the expectations are there will be a raft of betting shop closures, and the importance of betting shops was hammered home by Tracy Mooney when she was speaking following her announcement as winner. Come and see us, she said to government, come and see what we do. She spoke about the importance of the community aspect that betting shops bring to communities and to high streets up and down the country. She delivered really powerful words and timely words too. Chris, I know you've been, while I was away in Oz, you were writing plenty about betting shops. It was a big read on the importance of betting shops. What did you take from all that? What did you learn from all that?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously the culture in betting shops has changed over the last 20 years because it's got so much easier to watch horse races, hasn't it? You know, if you happen to have a bet on, you could be anywhere and just switch on your phone. You know, you could be in the queue in the supermarket watching Main Hurdle at Chepstow. So there isn't that positive reason for people to be in betting shops in the afternoon, and the result is they are quieter than they used to be. But, you know, it would be completely wrong to then go straight to the point about, oh, well, they're all dying and they're all going to close and, you know, nobody's going to use them anymore. There's still plenty of business there. It's just that it's periodic. You know, people go there in the mornings, they turn up at their lunch breaks, they go there at tea time, you know, on the way home. Lots of these shops are still perfectly viable businesses, and there's plenty of towns where, you know, they're very grateful to have shops that are still viable because, you know, the whole high street is under pressure.
So it's
still the case that, you know, some of these shops are community hubs, and you can go in there, you know, and find the same five guys, you know, chatting away of an early afternoon. And some of those guys are still, you know, right into their horse racing. And spend, you know, hours watching it and chewing it over with their mates. So depending on the shop that you go into, you know, you can have, I think, a very sort of friendly experience, which is quite reassuring to me. I was worried that all of that had gone.
Yeah.
You know, there are shops near me in Cheltenham, but you'd think in Cheltenham, for goodness sake, they ought to still be viable. But there's a couple that have gone in recent years. But there's still plenty that are surviving and thriving and busy enough at times. And the point for racing to take is that these are all generating plenty of cash for the sport. I mean, on average, according to one bookie's estimate, it's $23,000 per year that each shop sends back to racing. On top of doing that sort of promotional job that it's, you know, it's your literal shop window on the high street connecting people there with horse racing. So they're still immensely valuable, still doing a great job for the sport. And if lots of them close as the result of what happens in this budget, then that, you know, that's not far short of a tragedy for racing. And it's, you know, the bottom line is going to take a really serious hit if the Chancellor tries to take £1 billion out of the betting industry, which is what's been talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, even though, I mean, there was a piece in the FT today again that indicated, you know, reports inside line that racing is likely to get a carve out in the budget, but there's so much misunderstanding in the wider media and perhaps even in government about what a carve out for racing means, and this sense that, okay, well, if we leave racing alone, then racing is fine. But we all know that if for good or bad, if bookmakers are bashed, if gaming is bashed, if Machine Games Duty is bashed, that will might have a massive knock-on effect for horse racing.
Absolutely. So, you know, horse racing, we might see as horse racing as, you know, the most important betting product, but people still go to the betting shops. I mean, my dad still does it. He goes to the betting shops, places on his coupon, his football accumulator at the weekend and stuff. So if other sports take the hit as well, it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. And I think the call out is quite good. Come and see us from Tracy Mooney, because on a personal experience, obviously I'm from a different generation in terms of was technology first when I first started betting as well. Well, I've been into a betting shop a few times, and the first time I went into it, I was so pleasantly surprised about, you say, the community feel towards it. It's a lovely hub of the place of togetherness that's different to the pub in a way, you know. And I just think it'd just be so sad if they don't understand what's going to happen. I mean, it's squeaky bum time now, isn't it? With what, 9 days to go, maybe?
9 days to go. And Chris, you wrote in your column on Friday. Yeah, I mean, you obviously laid out that the government does need to find money from somewhere, but this isn't the place to find it.
It's going to be counterproductive, isn't it? You know, economically, and you'd like to think that they would understand that at the Treasury. You know, if they try and take a bit more tax out of this, out of betting, you're going to see shop closures, you know, and they employ a lot of people who are paying tax now who would then maybe be claiming benefits. And there's this thing called the Laffer curve that economists talk about. Now, I'm straying into territory beyond my normal comfort zone, but they talk about the point where if you increase tax above a certain point, then you end up taking in less money than you were getting before because it's so undermining to the activity that you're taxing and regulating. And there are quite serious analysts out there who'd think that that's the point that we're about to get to in the, with the betting industry. So hopefully there's a change of heart. There may well still be. But like you, I'm worried that they don't seem to have made that connection between betting and racing. You know, the line I put in the paper on Friday was, you can't hit betting without giving racing a black eye. And they ought to have been able to put that together, you know, some months ago. But, they were still the Treasury putting out these sort of quite tetchy briefings along the lines of, we're not taxing you, we're taxing betting. And, unfortunately, yeah. The end is going to be the same.
Yeah. Won the show on a slightly more positive note, and then we've got a great race to look forward to on Saturday. Hopefully a great race to look forward to on Saturday with the Betfair Chase at Haydock. Good card at Ascot. Champion Hurdle horses coming out at Punchestown in the Morgiana Hurdle. Matt, what are you looking forward to in particular this week?
Ooh, definitely the two-day Punchestown mean. I think one of the best things that they've done in Irish racing is, I'm not all for festivalisation and whatnot, but the two-day meeting at Navan this week, followed by 2 days at Punchestown, followed by 2 days at Fairy House, it's been very, very shrewd race shuffling the fixtures around. Galopin de Champs might not be in the John Durkin at the weekend, but that's going to be an absolute corker, as it always is. And it's just nice to see some of the old staying chasers back in the Betfair Chase. Well, it might not be the best grade one we ever get, but it's still going to be quite a good field.
It could be quite informative, couldn't it? With
yeah,
a couple
definitely.
Of sort of young pretenders. To sort
well, with
of
Haiti Couleurs going there now, so they must see something thinking, right, this could be our... Well, it's Britain's leading Gold Cup hope at the minute, so no better place to try it than on Merseyside at the weekend.
I mean, and regardless of where he ends up in March, he's just a horse I love. You know, he's brilliant
like
to watch. He's
horse.
He, you know, he's a great, great fencer.
He's one that could get a big following quite quickly with the way he wears his heart on his sleeve.
You'd like to think he might already be there. So that'll be fun. But just the fact that we've had a proper amount of rain and hopefully now people will start to run their horses with confidence. You know, you get that sense that people have been itching for weeks to run some of these horses and just couldn't. You know, they'd enter them and then take them out at the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, now hopefully a few triggers are going to be pulled, you know.
Yes, indeed. The rain has come. The jump season has well and truly started, and there'll be much to talk about when we get to next week's show. Until then, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Festivalisation and Harry Plain.
Harry Plain. Nailed Harry. Both of them too.
Both of them.
Unless Harry fancies doing a new celebration with his hand in his air like that, we can call it the Skellycopter then.
Okay. On that, we will end this week's show. We wish you well and see you next week. Bye-bye.